me, is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you very much for pressing play.
Oh yeah, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. We have a special guest who is, you know, in outer space right now, actually in Africa. Doing big, big, big things.
Yeah, absolutely.
People know that these things that, you know, we dream of here, people have the same dreams all over the world.
It's Ahmed Ninalowo.
Ninalowo. Yes,
Ninalowo. I love it. I love it.
Now, me too.
Your name is from where?
Nigeria.
Yeah.
Nice.
It means money is for spending. The problem is I don't have any money.
I love it.
Oh, man.
Well, you're about to be getting it. You know,
that's
and,
right.
You know, the other thing is life is anybody with money will say that life's more than just money. So
absolutely.
We really, really appreciate you being here with us. And I'm sure once people listen to your story, they'll be like, oh, I see where you're from. So
yeah.
Tell us first, take us back to medical school. What would you consider to be your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
I think my toughest class, you know, the first couple of years of medical school was pharmacology, just because, you know, I couldn't, you know, relate to anything that wasn't practical. You know, it was just basically cramming and taking exams for me.
That's a good point.
And then, my toughest rotation was OB-GYN, you know, it was just a bunch of sad, miserable residents, you know, and angry women.
Yeah.
So I wanted nothing to do that with that rotation.
It's just funny because you think that, like, you know, with the beautiful babies coming, it would be a little bit more of a happy place, but...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stress related with it.
Isn't it something how the attendings have bright smiles with the moms and the new moms? As soon as they walk out the door, it's like,
oh yeah,
it's a completely different person. You were just so happy a minute ago. What happened to you?
Exactly.
Yeah,
oh, that's so funny. Now, where did you go to medical school?
University of Illinois.
Nice. Yes, and this is which one in Chicago?
So we went. I went to the one in Peoria, Illinois.
Oh, nice. Okay. Nice. Oh, that's cool. So I'm from Carbondale, Illinois, originally, actually. So
okay.
Yeah, we have like the SIU. I think there's a branch in Carbondale too that like rotates through like Ringfield, I think. So
no, that's SIU, right?
Oh, that's SIU.
Southern Illinois University. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And well, that's interesting. Now, how'd you end up out there?
So interesting. You know, I it's a long story, but you know, I came to America in 99 after high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to college. I went to community college in Chicago for a couple years. I couldn't get into a university straight away because I did not have all the prerequisites or, you know, the what I needed to get into a university. Anyways, I went to a community college first, Harold Washington College in Chicago.
Wow.
And I remember the first day I went to the admissions office, they asked me what I wanted to study, and I said medicine, and they just busted into laughter, like, dude, you're in a community college. There's no medicine here. You know, but in Nigeria, you know, you basically leave high school and you go into medical school, you know.
That's
but
right.
In America, it was a little different where you had to get a bachelor's degree, you know. So I went there for 2 years, and then I transferred to the University of Illinois in Springfield, where I finished my bachelor's degree in clinical laboratory sciences.
Nice.
Then I thought I'd take about 2 years off in order to before going to medical school. So I was working for those 2 years, and then I started taking the MCATs. And let's just say the verbal reasoning section wasn't so nice to me.
Oh man!
The first time I took the MCAT, so I had to take it again. So I ended up spending 3 years working, and then got into the University of Illinois, and they gave me a very good package at that time. And I was in Illinois already, so it was very convenient to just go to the University of Illinois. At that time, we spent the first year in Urbana-Champaign.
Gotcha.
And then the last 3 years in Peoria. I didn't want to go back to Chicago just because I wanted to get away from the distractions of Chicago at that time. So Peoria was the perfect fit.
Interesting.
Great, man.
Very cool.
And what after Peoria, where'd you go after that?
So I went to the University of Maryland. So at that time, I'd finished med school. I'd interviewed at basically, I mean, every program you could talk to in the every premium program or, you know, big Ivy League program in the country you could talk about. But my wife at that time, her sister and her family lived in Maryland, and she wanted to be in Maryland. So yeah. I interviewed at Hopkins. I interviewed at University of Maryland. What I saw about University of Maryland was, you know, there were a lot of people like me there. You know, just down to earth folks. You know, it was just a fun place to be, and you know, I made that my number one. Nice. And they liked me. I liked them. You know, and it worked out. So I spent 5 years at the University of Maryland, and then came time for fellowship. I really now wanted to kind of, you know, do the Ivy League thing because I wanted that on my resume. But then I also wanted to go to one of the top programs for IR in the country. And I interviewed all over the place again, and then interviewed at University of Pennsylvania. And it was just a click, you know. I just clicked with the people in the department there. I mean, that was the first place that they told me that, you know, we want to help make you the best IR you could possibly be, you know. And they looked me in the face and told me that, you know. And, you know, even after my interview, I had a few conversations with the folks there, Mike Solin, Scott Trertola, Stavropoulos. And those guys just, I mean, they believed in me so much that I couldn't wait to start there. And, you know, again, I ranked them number one, and they ranked me high. And so we matched, and I went to Philly for that 1 year. And that is probably one of the best years of my life as far as the training I got there.
Wow.
Was intense, but we did a lot of good work in that year.
Yeah. You know, I interviewed there, man, for fellowship, and I thought it was, you know, top notch, and I thought that he would definitely help me become the best IR I could be. So and you know, you went and you did it. It worked out. That's great, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And like I think you know, the theme that we've kind of noticed is, you know, sometimes you choose the people. Place, and you're choosing the people because it's, you know, like you want to be in a supportive environment. You want to be in a place, where, you know, people are going to like want to see you succeed, you know, not necessarily just have you, you know, do the work that they don't want to do. So I think that's a big difference. And, you know, sometimes you can get both like you did. You got an Ivy League name and you got, you know, people who are there to support you. And, you know, we've only heard very, very positive things about UPenn in general. So that's great you know, you ended up there too. So yeah. I was also going to say University of Maryland, that's a great place for radiology. I think for medicine in general.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I mean, it was a top radiology program. I had a good time there. Those 5 years, 4 years I spent there.
Yeah.
Again, I think, you know, there was a lot of destiny in my training and kind of what's happened to me so far. You know, I remember at the University of Maryland when I was interested in IR, I was a little scared of IR because I just didn't think I could do all these fancy things, you know, but I always met people who just kind of took a liking to me early in my career and, you know, wanted to support me and help me develop.
Yes.
You know, so I always had those people behind me. And, you know, I went to places where I found those people very easily, and it worked out for me.
Well, that's great, man. So I always like to ask, on your journey from, you know, young man from Nigeria, comes to the States and wants to be a physician and an interventional radiologist, what was the most difficult hurdle you had to, or highest hurdle you had to climb over, or you know, how'd you make it, and what was so difficult?
So, you know, so for me, for example, you know, like two of my brothers were in the States before I got to the States because, you know, you imagine two kids were 16, 17, 18, coming to America, you know, the land of the free, you know, with a lot of fun. My brothers weren't doing too good in college, you know, so my dad really didn't want me to come to America at that time. Same, I would do differently, right?
So
I graduated in 4 years. But I think the biggest hurdle I had to face was still the MCATs, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm very good at standardized tests, right? Mm. So I had to take this exam where I took it the first time. I mean, I bumped the verbal reasoning section. I took it the second time, bumped the verbal reasoning section. The only school I got into when I applied was Howard, and I really didn't want to go to Howard. So I just waited another year to take it with that resilience. Then when I got into medical school, you know, one of the biggest challenges I faced in medical school was statistics when I got there, you know. as an African American at that time, about 10% of the people who went to that medical school were African American, but 50% of the people who filled out of the first or second year were African American. So you could see how skewed those statistics were, right?
Yeah.
So at that time, I remember, you know, they offered us, you know, extra lessons, extra everything in order to succeed. But, you know, I really just didn't want to be part of that statistic as far as, you know, being given anything extra to succeed. But one thing I wanted to do was graduate at least the top 5% of my class. So I was determined to do that, you know. So all I did was just study, you know. I just got into a focus where I knew that, you know, getting into med school was difficult, but I knew I wanted to get out at the top of the class. And I just went into study mode, and that's what I did. I studied my ass off, you know, and, you know, it paid off.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think that's like exactly a great, you know, it's a great antidote to give to people, because you're not the only person who struggles on like the MCAT or standardized. It's just standardized to something that, you know, may not be standard to us. So, you know, you're taking this test and you're like, you know, you can't have a different mind, you know, like you just like it doesn't work that way. So you just have to work as hard as you can. And then hopefully you can turn that, you know, that verbal score into a chip onto your shoulder. And then, you know, you kind of do your thing in med school. You graduate at AOA. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, huge accomplishment, man. Kudos to you, bro.
Absolutely. So take us back to Nigeria. So where are you from in Nigeria?
So I'm from a city of Lagos. It's the most populous city in Africa. It's about 20 million people in this very small piece of land. But it's a city of true hustlers, you know. Lagos it's a city that never sleeps. You know, so you can see my draw back to Lagos, you know.
Yeah,
I remember even in med school, my first year out of med school, my first summer I spent in Lagos in one of the public hospitals out here. Because I'd always, you know, I mean, growing up, I'd always seen doctors out here as just gods, you know. I mean, the doctor.
Yes.
I mean, I remember back then, you know, if you asked a kid what he wanted to be, you'd want to be a doctor or a lawyer. Now, my kid, now I wouldn't advise him to be a doctor or a lawyer. I'll tell him go to finance, go make some money on Wall Street. You know, but back then, you know, all you wanted to be was a doctor or a lawyer, and so I always admired that. So, and my dad, I always wanted to make him proud. So, my first summer, I came out here and I would volunteer at the public hospital. I learned what medicine was like here, you know.
Yes.
And you know, all through my career in America, I'd always wanted to do something in America that I could bring back to Nigeria, and it'd be unique.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I remember when I was going into radiology to start with, you know, I was a little scared that, you know, this is something that'd be hard for me to go practice in Nigeria. I mean, how would I make money? How would I get a niche for myself? And then doing IR, I was even more scared that how is this possible that I could do something so technologically advanced that we were doing in America. I mean, I was seeing everything that was happening though in my residency. I was seeing what my attendings were doing. And I was always thinking that how is this possible in Nigeria? And that was my biggest fear into going to IR, is that there's no way I could do this in Nigeria. But then, you know, I just fell in love with IR. I mean, I saw, you know, a patient come into our IR suite bleeding from gastric varices. And an IR guy went into the neck, you know, put in a tip shunt, shut off the varices, and the patient's hemodynamics completely changed.
Wow.
And for me, what I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to be that guy who, you know, wielded catheters and wires and was able to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's but awesome. If you told me that, you know, if you told me 5 years ago that I would be where I am now doing all of this in Nigeria, I would tell you it was impossible.
Well, tell us exactly what you're doing in Nigeria then, because I think people are going to be mind blown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, to keep it simply, we're doing basically every complex interventional radiology procedure you could think of that's done anywhere in the Western world in Nigeria. So, I mean, I had a dream, when I finished my fellowship, when I started a job, that, you know, we could probably do interventional radiology, at least at a small scale in Nigeria, right?
Yes.
So after 1 year being an attendant, so I would say, you know, at Penn, I was very, very well trained. I mean, I was very comfortable by the time I became an attendant. And my first year as an attendant, I would do, you know, things where, you know, people who were 5 years out weren't comfortable doing by themselves. I just, you know, I just would do them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had no fear, you know.
Yeah.
So I had this. So I started kind of just surveying what kind of equipment was in Nigeria about 4 years ago, on how I could, you know, translate some of the skills back home.
Well, let me ask you this: So you started surveying the equipment. Now, were you, relative to your expectations, were there more equipment or less equipment than you thought there was going to be?
So there was actually more equipment that I thought I was there was going to be, but it was all in the private world, right?
Yes, obviously, I think that's a very important circle. That's 100% true. So
what happened is, you know, some guy named Dr. Yemi Johnson, who, you know, was the father of interventional cardiology in Nigeria. He actually, I mean, in his 50s, decided to leave America and move to Nigeria to start interventional cardiology.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, obviously, you know, he convinced some folks to buy a cat lab, you know, so they started doing some work. And then a French company opened a hospital called Euricare, where they also hired an interventional cardiologist to compete with them. Mm-hmm. So now there were two cat labs in Nigeria. So I started searching on the internet as far as who had cat labs and who had, you know, the equipment that was possible to do IR. And I found these two entities. So I basically approached both of them and I said, hey, I emailed them and I said, I want to come to Nigeria. And you guys, you know, they don't take anybody seriously from the U.S. just because, you know, it's hard to come down here to do any work.
Exactly.
Because the conditions are not easy here. And I guess we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I talked to them and I said, I'm going to come home and we could have a talk. So I can look at the equipment. We had a talk and they said, oh, well, if you want to start coming down, you could start coming down to do some work. So immediately I went back to America and I went to my job and I said, you know, I want my vacation time to be 1 week every 6 weeks. And I'm going to use all my CME time or whatever because I'm going to start doing this work in Nigeria.
Wow.
So they accommodated me and then I started coming down 1 week every 6 weeks. You know, the first couple of trips, we really didn't do much. We did a couple of liver biopsies. But I remember the first liver biopsy that I did, the patient had traveled from a state called Enugu to Lagos to do this liver biopsy.
How far away is that from Lagos?
So if you think about, let's say, New York to Baltimore.
Wow.
Oh, wow, for a liver biopsy.
For a liver biopsy, right? Mm-hmm. So, but again, you know, this guy, the only option he had at that time was he was going to go out of the country to get this liver biopsy done.
Yes. Right.
So that blew my mind. Like, you know, this guy just flew from the East all the way to Lagos to see me to do a liver biopsy that took me 5 minutes to do.
Yeah, and procedure that you feel like is very simple.
Yeah, this is mindless work, right? Mm-hmm. So you start to think about it and you start to go, man, this is really a big need here. And then I started looking at, so I started thinking about it from a business perspective as to, you know, how do I make sure that, you know, this is not only stupid, but it's also sustainable, right? So I registered my company called IR.Nigeria. I also registered a company in the U.S., you know.
I love it. I mean, you're from Lagos, so you're a hustler.
Yeah. You know, so I registered, and then I started, I thought about it. I said, you know, what elective IR procedures can I actually advertise and do on an elective basis? And basically could be very popular. And the first thing I thought about was uterine fibroid embolizations, right? Mm-hmm. And at that time, that wasn't being done in Nigeria. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start advertising, you know, uterine fibroid embolizations so that I could do them on an elective basis. I'll see patients virtually and then just come here and do them. So those will be my stable as far as the procedures I would do when I got in here. And then I would do everything else as they came.
Okay, and that's so perfect. Could you tell us real quick, what is a uterine artery or fibroid embolization for anyone, younger people listening?
Yes, absolutely. So uterine fibroid embolization, it's a minimally invasive procedure for treating fibroids. So the options for treating fibroids are obviously surgery, which is having a myomectomy or hysterectomy, which is either removing the fibroids or completely removing the uterus. With uterine fibroid embolization, what we're doing is we're going into the artery, either in the wrist or the groin, and with a very tiny pinhole access, and we're going into the arteries in the uterus to put particles in the uterus to stop the blood flow to fibroids, and fibroids could basically shrink and die. So, I mean, this is night and day for women. Imagine being cut open to remove your fibroids versus, you know, a nick in your skin in order to go stop the blood flow to the fibroids, right?
Yes.
And exactly. And women in Africa did not have this option. Women in sub-Saharan Africa did not have this option before we came into the market, right? So we introduced this option and we started advertising heavily on Instagram, on Facebook, you know, that we could do this uterine fibroid embolization. So that became my stable. So I would see patients all through the 6 weeks virtually and basically line up patients to do uterine fibroid embolization.
Wow. This is why we're working.
Yeah, I mean, I was basically working all the time. I mean, my wife hated me during this period because my whole 6 weeks in America, and remember, at this time, I didn't have equipment, right? I didn't have a supply chain. I had to basically start, you know, building a company in America in order to buy supplies. You know, I used donated supplies, everything I could in order to make sure that, you know, I could have supplies when I came back to Nigeria. Then I started advertising things like biliary stents because there was no ERCP down here. There's still no ERCP down here. There's one person that does ERCP, 100 million people in a public hospital very far. You know, so we could do things like biliary stents, right?
Wow.
So we started, and then I would basically go knock on every physician's door that would talk to me about this thing called interventional radiology because no one knew what interventional radiology was, right?
They probably thought you were lying, too.
Yeah. I was basically speak with everyone that would talk to me, you know. So I became that guy that, you know, basically I was the pest. You know, everyone knew me as the doc from America that would just go talk to anybody. Anyways, you know, we developed traction within about 6 months to a year. People started knowing me a lot on doing uterine fibroid embolization and biliary. And then, you know, very slowly, it came to a point where people started to recognize that, you know, we could even do emergent interventions. So I would leave Nigeria back to America, and within a few days, I would get called about a patient who was jaundiced or a patient who had an issue that needed to be taken care of by interventional radiology. But then I just got back to America, and I wasn't back for another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? And the question was always, so what do we do now? You know, because, you know, I had, you know, set up this service. People started to depend on this service.
Yeah.
But I wasn't always here, right?
Yes.
But then my family life was starting to suffer also because even my 6 weeks in America, I was either working at my job or in the evenings. I was either consulting for patients in Nigeria in the evenings or the weekends, or basically finding ways to get supplies or sorting supplies on my weekends. So I was completely unavailable. So, you know, my family life started to suffer. Everything started to suffer. And my wife at that time did not mind living in Nigeria. So I remember I came back to America at one point and my wife started to complain that, you know, you're never available. You're spending too much time in Nigeria. All you do is your work. And I said, you know, you want to live in Nigeria? And she said, yes. I said, well, we could move to Nigeria in 3 months. She thought I was joking.
Oh,
and
wow.
At that time, I'd already made a calculation, right? I'd already seen that it was a business case for what I was doing in Nigeria. Even though I wasn't going to make as much money as I was making in the U.S., I knew I was going to make enough money to be sustainable.
And making a difference.
And making a big difference. And, you know, there was no way I could abandon the work I had started at that time because, you know, that's all I cared about was my patients in Nigeria and, you know, taking care of my own people.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I had a job at that time in America, too, that I was so valuable to them that, you know, I had gone to them and said, you know, I'm going to quit. And they said, you know, well, is there anything we could do for you as far as still working? And I said, well, I could work 2 weeks every 6 weeks here and I would work 6 weeks in Nigeria. And they said, OK, we'll take that. And they paid me a pretty sum to do that. You know,
that's pretty
good. I had the best of both worlds where I would spend 6 weeks in Nigeria. I moved my family to Nigeria because this was where I spent my most of my time. Mm-hmm. Then I would come back to America for 2 weeks until obviously COVID killed all of that.
Yes.
So, you know, I've been here now for 2 years straight.
Wow.
I'm working.
That's amazing. You know, and your wife is Nigerian, I'm assuming?
My wife is Nigerian, yes.
Okay.
Wow. You know, so my family is here now, I'm here now, and, you know, especially during the COVID period, I mean, we did some work here that, you know, if we were not here, patients would have died.
Absolutely.
You know, if you could imagine, right? We came to a point in Nigeria where no one could leave the country. No one could go to America, no one could go to Europe, no one could go anywhere for treatment. All they had were doctors here in Nigeria. One of the cases that I would never forget was a kid with portal hypertension who had basically a connection between the hepatic artery and the portal vein and had a big gastrointestinal bleed and was massively bleeding for a couple of weeks before he got sent to us. You know, that kid was only 26, and you know, we were able to give him an intervention here in Lagos during the peak of the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and he survived. They walked out of the hospital 3 days later. You know, he's a success story. And so many success stories like that during that COVID period where we were able to touch patients, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, being in Nigeria and coming back to Nigeria, even during those 6 weeks and 2 weeks stints, became like cocaine. You know, I'd never used drugs, but I mean, it became my drug.
Yeah.
All I could think about was being back home and doing work.
That's wonderful, man.
Wow. Know?
And then you think about if you're not there, mm-hmm. it doesn't get done. The low, no, the heaviness of that alone. I'm so happy you're able to do it. That's just, it's just wonderful. So uplifting.
Wow. Yeah, that's wow. That's amazing. I mean, it's just you had a dream and you made it happen and use all the training here. And, you know, sometimes you just got to jump without, you know, seeing where you're going to jump to. So
yeah.
you actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned some of those conditions that aren't typically ideal. What can you give us some detail around that in practicing IR?
Okay, so I'll tell you. So, for example, okay, let's talk about this kid with portal hypertension, right? That traveled from a public hospital, right? So, in this case, is in a hospital in America, your ICU doc was going to take patient. You have your hospital, you have fluid, right? IR tech was going to get your supplies, you know. So you have to think about the way I provide this service here, right? I provide everything from A to Z. So, you know, the supply chain, for example, we mm-hmm. get all of the supplies into this country. My company does that, right? Just think about everything we use in America, right?
So much.
So we're responsible for stocking over 500 different things, specific supplies in this country.
Yeah.
My team is responsible for that. Not
I'm
any
sure you feel different when it's time to throw away a catheter. You're like,
no.
Yeah,
no,
right.
No, I keep this one.
Yeah. You know, so that's one, you know. And then, you know, all of the support that we're used to having, you know, a patient needs blood, you know, somebody else taking care of that. I am a complete physician here. I take care of everything from A to Z.
Wow.
You know, I do my ICU, because no one knows anything about IR.
No,
you know,
not at all. No,
so all of my outpatient care, I take care of everything from A to Z. So it could be, I mean, it could be really, really demanding sometimes because you know, I'm always on call, there's nobody else on call.
You're on Q0.
I am it,
yes,
you know. But wow. you know, as I was telling Travis earlier, I'm starting a training program for a physician who's going to join me for 2 years to get trained in IR. You know, and hopefully we could create some sustainability going forward, because obviously this is not sustainable being the only guy doing all of this complex work for a long time, right?
So you're the only interventional radiologist covering, you know, how many people, how many miles would you say?
Well,
20 million people.
200 million people, really.
Wow.
The entire country.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, there are guys who have gone out, some Nigerian radiologists who've got some training on interventional radiology, but not to any complex level. I mean, they do biopsies, you know, drains mm-hmm. and things like that. But when you talk about complex IR, I mean, last Sunday I got called in. One of my partners, his twin brother, was bleeding from a submucosal tumor in the stomach, and I had to access a branch of the right gastroepiploic artery in order to stop that bleed. Okay, so I imagine a guy like that, if I was not here, he had no other option but to go to open surgery.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly.
True. You know.
Wow. You know, Hamed, I used to think that we could do a world of good just doing a paracentesis or a thoracentesis and having some people comfortable, you know, mm-hmm. over time.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, just having a space for that, but you're taking it many steps further and doing the first prostate artery embolization. You know, you're doing TIS procedure, you're stopping bleeding, you're saving lives. And do you think there will ever be an opportunity for some IR docs in the States to come over and help you out? Or do you have a pipeline?
Well, yeah, so we actually had a pipeline prior to COVID, you know. So I'm a member of RADAID. I don't know if you know RADAID. So RADAID is a nonprofit organization that's basically, you know, the goal is to disseminate radiology skills and interventional radiology skills across the world. Mm-hmm. So I started RADAID in Nigeria, and we used to bring physicians from America, about three or four attendants every 3 months or so, to Nigeria to train docs down here. Mm-hmm. So we had a collaboration with two universities, the University of Ibadan and Lagos University Teaching Hospital, where we're doing this training, you know, and then these physicians would obviously come to my private practice to work with me. So we had that pipeline going, but COVID, I mean, completely, you know, just screwed up that pipeline, and nothing's happened in the last 2 years.
Oh, gotcha.
Wow.
You know, but what we're hoping is that we could get that started again this year and getting docs from the States to come down and help us out. And for example, I'm going to start working in the States again. For example, in March, I'm in the U.S. for 2 weeks. In April, I'm in the U.S. for 2 weeks. And my biggest scare right now is, you know, people depend on me so much here that how could I be away for 2 weeks? But, you know, I have to keep my credentials. I have to, you know, keep my license in the U.S. So I have to work in the U.S.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't have a choice.
If anyone hears this and they want to help you out, what's the best way? Or they want to work and do some great work in Nigeria as an interventional radiologist, what's the best way for them to contact you, your organization?
So, I mean, we're always open to, you know, collaboration. So my email is info@irdocnigeria.org. If they were to contact me, I mean, what I'm looking for now is, you know, for example, you know, especially when I'm leaving to the U.S., is for people to be able to cover the practice. You know, obviously you're not going to make, you know, the kind of lucrative sums you make in the U.S. doing locums. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, when I came down here, I wasn't looking to, you know, be stinkingly rich. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't do horrible, but we're not going to do as good as we do in the U.S. But I mean, the service we provide here, I mean, the level of satisfaction you have from doing the work here is second to none.
I bet.
Right?
I'm sure.
So what we're looking for now is people who are interested in both training physicians down here and then, you know, people who are interested in helping cover the practice when I'm away, to help take care of patients when I'm not, when I'm not around.
Wow. Yeah, no, I think that's all doable. You know, like, there's a lot of you know, African origin physicians who are in medical school, in residency, you know, who finished, and, you know, hopefully with you getting the word out, maybe, you know, they can get in contact with you about, you know, doing something like this. And of course, Travis is coming.
Yeah, man, I would love to come yesterday.
what I would tell you though, is that, you know, so people my age typically don't come down to Nigeria to do this work. Right. So normally, the folks that move back to Nigeria are typically a retirement age or, you know, late 60s, you know. But what's happened since we've started doing this work is a lot of really young Nigerian physicians who are in the States, in the UK, have contacted me and are starting to look to do work back home.
Absolutely. You know?
So if we've not done anything, we've actually inspired quite a few young folks. Like, I had a guy that, he's a GI, he's an advanced GI guy. He was here in December. He was back again last week.
Yes.
You know, and he's coming back in February. And the only reason he's so encouraged now is because he sees me and he's going, if you could do this, I could do this. I'm going to come down here every couple months.
That's what this is about.
You know.
No, there's definitely a brain drain from our, like, countries in Africa where, like, the, you know, the brightest and the hardest working, sometimes they leave because the education level is just not at the same level. Absolutely. So, you know, they'll go to Europe, they'll go to, you know, America, you know, go to Russia, get their education, and then sometimes just stay. And, you know, that's basically losing talent. So, you know, I think what you're doing is, you know, being a, you know, being there and just being an inspiration for people who are, like, thinking about doing it. Because I'm sure these people think about it all the time. I'm sure I think about it all the time as well. Like, okay, what can I do back home? So that's, it's amazing that you're doing it. And, Could you touch on the diagnostic radiology situation there? I know you said that there's a vertical situation that you're pioneering as well.
Oh yeah, so we so at the same time we started IR, we got into teleradiology. So before we came into the Nigerian market, all of the teleradiology that was done in Nigeria was done by either companies in India or Egypt.
Yes.
But if you send a bunch of Nigerian scans to an Indian firm, basically there were sweatshops down there reading Nigerian films, right? So there was completely no connection between the Nigerian patient and the Indian guy that was reading films for the Nigerian patient.
Exactly.
The Nigerian physician could never talk to them or have a tumor board with the physicians down here. So we started a company called Accurid Radiology. I have a partner in London. We started this company together, and we started advertising to get, you know, Nigerian hospitals onto our platform. And, you know, very quickly, we got, you know, the first two clients in 2019, you know, and we just provided a service they'd never seen before where, you know, we had Nigerian doctors reading for Nigerian patients, although there were Nigerian doctors that weren't in the country. But these were doctors that could be reached at any time. You know, you could call them to talk about the patient's care. If they saw a critical finding, they would call a doctor here in Nigeria to talk about it. And then we started tumor boards, you know, where our radiologists were always available. And very quickly, we grew exponentially within that year, you know. And, you know, hospitals started coming onto our platform and we started recruiting more radiologists. And now we're the premier teleradiology service in the country.
That's amazing. You know? Wow, that's amazing.
And that's within 2 years.
Yeah.
So both the interventional radiology realm and the diagnostic radiology realm, we've made a significant amount of progress in the time we've been here.
It's amazing. And radiology is very amenable to that type of, you know, technology, you know, taking advantage of that type of technology. You know, you know, in Sudan, you know, there's a, you know, a couple of residency programs and, you know, it's amazing. People are very, you know, they're very creative on the way that they use, you know, WhatsApp and they use like the internet to, you know, just share cases and, you know, get second reads. And, you know, people are very intuitive, like just amazing. You know, they're very, very creative when they need to be. So, you know, you have the dream to make it happen. It's possible. Definitely possible.
So. Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Dr. Ninalolo, well, where do you get your drive, man? Where do you get your energy? I mean, you have so many projects, so many things you're doing. You're working nonstop. You're making it happen. What drives you?
You know, I think a lot of it is organic. You know, so interestingly, a lot of people think I'm some kind of, you know, super businessman, and the truth is I'm actually not, right? I come from a family of business folks. My dad's a business person. My mom's a business person. Mm-hmm. So that's always been organic into, you know, doing business. Well, I think, you know, the biggest thing, if you talk to any entrepreneur is, you know, you find a need and you provide that need and you would be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so the need that I saw, I came into Nigeria and I found, where are the needs? Well, obviously interventional radiology was a big need. And diagnostic radiology, quality diagnostic radiology was a big need, right?
Exactly.
And we just fill those voids, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think as human beings, if you found voids where you could create value, that's all you really need to do to be successful is find a way to create value and do not rest on your morals on making sure that the quality that you're used to, you know, stays up there. And, you know, if you see my level of practice, so I train at Penn where we always, you know, put ourselves up on real clinical interventional radiology, meaning, you know, we wrote our own clinical letters, you know, we followed our patients, you know, longitudinally. And I do the same thing in Nigeria, you know, I practice with the same level of quality, with the same level of standards that I'm used to. I don't rest on my morals. So for me, I think success has been very organic in, you know, every day I learn a lot and I just continue to find places to create value. And I think when you create value, success would come with it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I hear a passion for taking care of the folks, the people of Nigeria and home. And that's just wonderful, man. It, I'm inspired. I hope all the listeners are inspired because we need to do that. We have to do that. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just yes, an amazing story. I think could you tell everybody where they can follow you again on the socials?
So we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. It's ir.nigeria. That's the handle on both Instagram and Twitter. Same thing on Facebook, but we're most active on Instagram and Twitter.
Perfect, perfect. Again, this is our people being very creative, you know, using Instagram and using Facebook and using Twitter to create a radiology business. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah, you know,
the word out and yeah, just big ups to you. Really appreciate
everything. I would just say, you know, for everyone that's African in the radiology space out there, you know, our continent still needs a lot of help, you know.
Yes.
If you have the skills, I mean, you cannot imagine the little things that we're used to providing. Just think about it, you know, in Travis, in your hospital, if IR was not to show up for 1 week in your hospital, the kind of void you would leave.
Right.
Now think about multiple hospitals down here not having interventional radiology available.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Can't be understated, man. There's a room. Yeah. There's this room and space for us to do the work that needs to be done on the continent. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're bearing a very, very large load. And, you know, I think everyone appreciates everything you're doing down there. So it's amazing. We really just appreciate you, you know, being here with us and talking with us. And I know it's tough to get a hold of you, but this is worth it. We really, really appreciate everything you're doing. And if there's anything we can do on our end, you just let us know. You know,
please do.
You know, put the word out. And you know, anyone who's interested with any skill level, you know, I think even skill level, you know, for people who are like are not even in medicine, people who like can do secretarial work, stuff like that, anything, like all that is all very, very useful for anyone. You know, running a business in Africa like that. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I forgot to mention, we also have a foundation called the Interventional Radiology Foundation, where we have a mission to take care of patients who cannot afford interventional radiology care, especially young patients who are in a dire need of care. And we know interventional radiology is the only service that could basically keep them alive. And we would always take care of those patients without thinking about the financial obligations of those patients.
Wow. Yeah, that's
there you go. Yeah, another way to give back. So
many ways to give back. I mean, that's amazing. Amazing story. Travis, any other questions? Because I know he's about to get another call about another patient.
I know, man. His time is precious. But yeah, I just want to thank you. And please let us know if we can help, how we can help. You've already given us plenty of opportunities. It's time for us to do it.
Absolutely.
To do the work. So.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And until next time, stay low and keep firing.
Keep firing, baby.